to call this meeting of Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. This is Wednesday, August 8th. It's 9:30 a.m. and we are in the Commissioners Meeting Room 108 in the Lincoln County Courthouse. First item on our agenda is to establish a quorum. We have a quorum of all three commissioners. Next item, this is something we do the first of each month, first meeting of each month, and our meeting a week ago on August 1st was an evening meeting in Sillette, so we delayed the recognition of our employees until today. We do this once a month, recognize employees on their five-year anniversaries or multiples of 5 years. We have five people to recognize today. And amongst them, they represent over, well, 70 years of service to our citizens and to our county. And I'll make note that we have Public Works well represented today with two individuals. So I'll call your name, hand you a certificate and a lapel pin, and then ask you to remain up front, and we'll get a group picture. So I'll come around and get started. And the first individual is J.W. Hupp from the District Attorney's Office, and it's 5 years of service. J.W. Next we have Amy Wechter, no M. 5 years of service in the Health and Human Services Department. Sorry, Amy, Next we have Lee Larson. Lee has 20 years of service in one of the two Public Works individuals.
Lee, why did you put up with me that long?
Some of us wonder about that too, but we have to put up with it. Donald Reed, also from Public Works. Donald here. Donald's not here. All right, and last but not least, Carol Quayle from
PA's office.
PA's office.
Oh, she's in there.
You're working away.
She's working?
This is not
she's
her working. Thing. Yes.
This is not her thing?
It's not her thing.
All right.
Public recognition is not.
We'll still recognize her and still give her the certificate and a lapel pin and thank her for her service to our citizens. All right. Where do you want the picture, Casey?
Why don't you two write together with Doug in the middle?
Doug in the middle?
Maybe okay. Scoot on down.
Okay, how about this? Mm-hmm. This good?
Yeah,
that looks okay.
Great. All right. Okay. Let's get some big smiles there. Thank you, guys. Congratulations.
Thank you all for your good work.
Permission to leave and get back to work?
Permission granted,
right,
sir.
Thank you.
As far as I'm concerned, you know, have a cup of coffee, but I think your boss is right there. No, so.
Thank you very much, sir.
Excellent. Appreciate your good work.
Another 20 years to go.
Yeah.
God willing.
All right, next item on our agenda is adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before the commission before. Is there any item anyone wishes to highlight? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
Move for approval of the consent calendar as submitted.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That motion carries. We move down now to a public hearing. This is a public hearing on a petition to vacate Bryan Creek Road, County Road 551. I'll open the public hearing. We'll hear a staff report, be an opportunity for the commissioners to ask questions, and we'll also have an opportunity for public input, and then I'll close the public hearing and we'll have deliberation by the commissioners. With that, open a public hearing on a petition to vacate Bryant Creek Road, County Road 551.
I'm going to hand out kind of a blown up version of the map there that's on the side.
I'm Roy Kenyon, Lincoln County Public Works Director. Today I am here to bring to you a petition to vacate a portion of the west end of Bryant Creek Road. The petitioners are Chris and Deborah Reardon. And before we get too far into this, if you've taken any time to look at the packet, you'll see that the road has several names. It's referred to as Bryant Creek Road, and it's also referred to as Eddyville School Road. They are one and the same. Just a little short history on that. Bryant Creek Road actually went from about 2.5 miles up Nashville Road down the would be the south side of the Aquinna River through more or less the town of Eddyville and looped back around and tied into the railroad. In the 80s, there was an attempt to clear up addressing for 911 purposes, and so they decided at that time that they would split that road at Highway 20, and the road to the west, the road that goes through Eddyville School, actually became Eddyville School Road. So Eddyville School Road, as it exists, is only the short piece that is the bridge and the approach into the school. Once you get beyond that, there really isn't a road there. So for all intents and purposes, it kind of still is Bryant Creek Road. But they are the same road. They're not two different roads. As I said, the petitioners are Chris and Deborah Reardon, and we have signature sheets from those two individuals. We also have a signature sheet from the other abutter, who is Paula Eddy and Carl Navarra. If you on the map, they would be the property owners to the north. So a portion of the current Bryant Creek right-of-way actually crosses a corner of their property. So I have signature sheets from both abutting property owners there. We have a letter from Kirk Bedford from the railroad, who actually states that they're on the east end where the right-of-way abuts the railroad right-of-way, that they have no issues with this petition. On the kind of the southwest end of the area to be vacated, the abutter there is actually Alcee Veneer, and we actually have a letter from Paul Smud, who says that he has no issues with this petition to vacate, that actually for their operations, their access is a private bridge that's further to the east off of Highway 20. And if you can remember where ODOT had their offices during the Highway 20 alignment project, that's basically the bridge that he's referring to. The reason for the petition is the Reardons would like to develop this property. They kind of have some constraints with setbacks. They have setbacks off of the current county road right-of-way, which would be 20 feet off of that right-of-way. Plus, the right-of-way itself is 60-foot width, and so you're looking at just on one side, the southeast side, it would basically take up 80 feet of their property with right-of-way and setback. They also have setbacks off of the railroad right-of-way, and the one property line for them is the center of the Aquinna River. And with it being adjacent to the Aquinna River, there's also some floodplain issues that kind of squeezes them into the corner of their property. And so by vacating the county right-of-way, it reduces setback, and they would gain at least an additional 80 feet to develop further to the north. The portion that they're asking to vacate is actually kind of an isolated piece of right-of-way. It borders the center line of the Aquinna River, and there is, as far as I can see, never ever been a bridge there. And I'll have a picture of that I can show you here in a little bit. And also on the railroad side, the only crossing of the railroad right-of-way is a private crossing, which I took a picture of the sign. As you can see, it says no trespassing, private crossing. So there is no legal public access across the railroad right-of-way to hook into Crystal Creek Loop. This picture here is a picture of a portion of their property, and it's kind of hard to see, but there are a couple blue ribbons that here and here. And this shows the kind of the downriver edge of their property. And those blue ribbons indicate the southerly right-of-way of Bryant Creek Road. And so if you can imagine, without this vacation, they would not be able to develop the portion to the right of those ribbons, plus another 20 feet on the left-hand side of those ribbons. So they basically lose the ability to do anything with that portion of property. And as far as the public right-of-way goes, and I'm not really sure why it is, but this is a port. This is looking down the railroad, downriver to the north from the private access. And where the public right-of-way would have crossed the railroad right-of-way is down there where that through cut is. And currently, the railroad, the rails itself are roughly about 15 feet lower than Crystal Creek Loop. And so the only thing I can think of is that maybe at the time that they surveyed and opened the road, which was back in 1891, that they possibly were thinking that they would use the terrain maybe as a loading facility. They would use that through cut to maybe load railroad cars. Because from what I understand, Crystal Creek Loop, which was then Highway 20, which was before that was a military road, existed at that time. The railroad was there, yet they did not, for whatever reason, carry their right-of-way across the railroad right-of-way and connect it into the public road right-of-way. And so as far as going forward, I don't believe that this could ever be used as a connection to the right-of-way that exists now. And this is actually looking back the opposite way, so you can kind of see the elevation difference. You can see the paved surface of Crystal Creek Loop on your left and the elevation difference between that and the tracks. I don't believe that this portion of right-of-way was ever actually developed. I went down to the river and looked for any signs of a bridge. It would have been a bridge constructed sometime in the late 1890s or early 1900s. I could find no indication that there was ever a bridge. Therefore, I don't believe that this portion of road was actually ever improved and was a road. In the packet back towards the back, I put in a copy of the Amblers, 1954 Amblers map. It would be the left side of the back side there. And if you look at Eddyville and you follow Bryant Creek Road out, in 1954, they didn't even indicate that the road actually continued across the river for whatever reason. I don't believe it ever did. So the Reardons are asking that you approve this request to allow them to fully develop their property and they would like your decision.
Questions, Commissioners? Commissioner Thompson? Okay. Any public input?
Yep.
Come on down.
Glad to be back. Cindy George. So I would like to know, number one, what is it that they plan on building? Do they plan on clear cutting? How much protection are we going to have for the water? Because as we all know, I'm hearing that whole area has now been clear cut in that section of highway. So I also know that we had a spotted owl issue when we were putting in that Highway 20. That was spotted owl habitat. And you guys had to wait until those spotted owls had left their nests before you could even finish that Highway 20 project. So there's a lot of environmental impacts that nobody's watching out for. Okay? So how many unit? Is it one house they're trying to develop?
One house.
Okay. And they're going to clear cut and obviously
I don't believe, I don't believe they're going to remove any further trees. And
it's just one
actual,
step?
The property owner is actually here.
Okay.
And we can...
And so, yeah, I'd like to know, you know, what they're going to do with their septic systems, water supply, because we know there's issues with water out in that area. We're declaring a drought. And what we're going to do to make sure that that river is not being affected.
Okay. Okay. Any other public input? The property owners here?
Yeah.
Please come forward. Thank you.
My name's Chris Reardon, property owner out there. No, to answer the question on the clear cutting, so the acreage is small. It's a less than 4-acre parcel. We have no plans of cutting any trees other than what have already been taken out. There was a home there up until, I'm going to say about 2005. It was a mobile home. It was removed, and it lied in part within the floodplain. So there was one corner of it that lied within the floodplain. The septic system was put in 1996, and it's been opened up and approved by Quinn at Public Works. So nothing will be done with it any different than was ever done. It'll be a 3-bedroom primary resident home is what we're wanting to put in. Water, we will drill a well. We haven't drilled a well yet. We will drill a well, and it will be close to where the old well was supposed to be, according to the mapping, but we can't find the old well. So I don't know what happened to it, but we haven't drilled a well in there currently. But that's our plan for water. As far as the river goes, we have no plans to do anything anywhere near the river that, you know, that the law would restrain us from. The main problem with the property, as far as the reason for needing to vacate the road, if possible, is it just really restrains the ability to build in a practical area within the property without getting into the floodplain, without getting too close to, you know, the railroad or the property line. Like Roy pointed out, even though it's 3.9 acres, the actual building footprint is very small without vacating this road.
Okay. Questions from commissioners?
The questions.
Okay. Any other?
Could I ask Mr. Husing a question since he's here? A very brief yes, no question, I think. Thank you for the information, sir.
Thank you. And I don't do a yes, no question.
We're going to get you trained someday on them. But just basically, I mean,
we'll see if I can do that.
Well, I think it would be self-evident, but even if we do approve this vacation request, which would open up more of a potential footprint for the proposed 3-bedroom house, you know, it was already mentioned that there's already been a septic inspection and the existing septic system was found to still be functional, but this house would still have to comply with all other permitting, setback, zoning requirements applicable to a property like this. Yes or no?
Yes.
Thank you. See, you did it. Okay.
I didn't introduce myself for the record.
Oh, yes,
I didn't
do.
Want to spoil that moment, but
please do.
Hanno Husing, Director of Planning.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any other public input?
Commissioners, before you take any further action or close the hearing, we do have one procedural matter we have to deal with here. And that is because this is a public hearing under ORS Chapter 368, there's multiple notice requirements that have to be made here. And two of the three legs of the notice got done properly, one did not. So we did the appropriate posting for this vacation request and the mailing, but the publication did not go through appropriately. So we have to actually, we've had to republish this, and because of our schedule, we were looking at actually asking you to continue this to August 22nd, but you don't have a meeting on the 22nd. So the next available date when we've got everybody available is September 12th. So I would ask that you not make a decision today on this particular matter, but rather entertain a motion to continue it so that we can have the public notice published, and then you'll continue the hearing, take any additional input that would be received on the 12th, and then make a decision.
Okay. So do we do that with a public meeting open?
Yes, leave the meeting open, just a motion to continue the hearing to September 12th.
Date time specific.
9:30 a.m. in this room.
Okay. I'll entertain such a motion unless commissioners have other questions.
Move to continue this hearing to September 12th, 9:30 a.m. in this room.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, so we will continue this public hearing on September 12th, 2018 at 9:30 a.m. here in this room. Close the public hearing. Any other discussion or comments? All right, we'll move on. Next item in our agenda, we have some discussion information items. First item would be the initiation of a vacation proceeding for Jump Up Joe, County Road 500. Director Kenyon, you're still up.
Lincoln County has received a petition to vacate County Road 500.
I goofed up.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's pack up. Sorry. Next item on our agenda is declaration of a local disaster and request to declare a state drought emergency for Lincoln County, Oregon. I guess that's Council Belmont. You may remain there until next.
Commissioners, we had a discussion on this matter last week in Sillette's at our joint meeting with the City Council in Sillette's, and then our meeting afterwards. We've had a request to do a local declaration of a disaster and seek the governor to declare a drought emergency for Lincoln County. And this request came from Gibson Farms. And we've got some additional materials that have come in since that time. I know you've got Oregon Farm Bureau and others. I did some quick research because this came in so quickly. And unfortunately, Jenny had been out fighting fires and doing some other training activities. This normally falls under the purview of the emergency management folks. But in their absence, I took this on to look at this particular issue. Learned a lot, and I'll just reiterate a little bit what we talked about last week. I was able to look at records since 1991, and twice in that period of time, Lincoln County has been part of a drought declaration, once in 1992 and once in 2015. In both of those cases, the state made the declaration. The state actually has to make the declaration. And there is an entity called the Drought Council, which is made up of folks from the Oregon Resources Board, Oregon Emergency Management, many other people around the state that actually make these recommendations to the governor, and the governor makes a declaration. So it was interesting to see that in that 30-year period, Lincoln County's actually never made a request itself to do a drought. So that can give you some indication of even the kinds of conditions we face. It's usually a determination that's made on a broader basis than a single county. So when this request came to us and I sent off a letter, or crafted a letter on your behalf, and we sent it off to the Drought Council, I had conversations with the two co-chairs. One of those is from Water Resources Board and the other is from Oregon Emergency Management about this process. And they said this is something that they're going to be looking at pretty carefully tomorrow. The Drought Council meets tomorrow, and that they anticipate they're going to have multiple additional requests and have an examination of multiple areas based on really what has happened, you know, over the course of a long period of time, but mostly over the course of the last 6 weeks. As the letter from Gibson Farms indicated to us, they've got about 80% of their production, blueberry production, still in need of watering. It's not unusual for them to stop watering sometime in the fall, so that's usually when the crops have all been harvested, and they're beyond the point that they need to do any additional watering there. The Drought Council folks actually got me in contact with some people that measure rates of water in the Siletz River and other areas, and that's part of the information the Drought Council will be looking at. I've included in your pack of one small bit of information that this will go to the Drought Council from the state, but it was an interesting indicator of where we are right now in Lincoln County. And what that shows is the flows on the Siletz River are flirting with historical lows for this time of year. And in fact, they are kind of going up and down on specific dates at this time, with the last time a drought declaration was made in Lincoln County, which was 2015. In addition, and as we've noted, the Fire Defense Board in Lincoln County instituted, they always institute some kind of burn ban. There's always something done, but we may be looking at a new normal where this year they did, declared a ban on all burning. So it's, you know, even to the extent that folks in campgrounds with campfires, open flames are basically prohibited in Lincoln County at this time because of the dryness and the conditions that are out there. So we are facing some unusual circumstances. The Drought Council actually really appreciated the fact that we were taking a look at this and wanted to make a request. So the next step would be to do this declaration. And this sets then triggers the Drought Council to do a formal consideration. They will make a determination whether or not to request or recommend to the governor that a drought be held. And if a drought declaration is made, that will free up a number of potential avenues and tools that that can be used to address the situation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Based on the information presented to us over the past week, I am in favor of moving forward with this. Just one thing I'd like to, you know, this entire letter from the Farm Bureau is part of our public record, but I think people should hear, you know, even though we aren't a strong agricultural county in terms of volume compared to other counties, I think it's interesting that the Farm Bureau points out that crop and livestock sales contribute more than $5 million annually to our economy. So this is business, and I think anything we can do to help local businesses in a situation like this is well warranted.
Well, this identifies a much bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
It is agriculture,
mm-hmm.
contrary to the numbers that show here.
Mm-hmm.
Fisheries is considered agriculture.
Yeah.
And if you take distant water and near water, you're $200 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so if you take those kinds of numbers, and even though salmon is fairly small in that total picture of fisheries, it's a very sizable proportion if it's a good season. It fluctuates largely, and low water is a critical issue to that. And recognizing this, I'm sure that the fishing industry as a whole would support the move to move this way.
Much more involved than just watering a field.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. Any other questions or comments?
So I wanted to say one thing, because we have never done one of these in at least the 30 years that I've been in here. And I had a conversation with the folks again at the Drought Council, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, we're following the right procedures for doing this. This is a precursor for them to officially do the consideration. Although, again, twice in the past 30 years, they have made a declaration in Lincoln County without us making an official request. In fact, in those particular circumstances, no counties really made the request. The Drought Council just looked at it on a much broader scale, and they may be doing that in this case, too. But they said that they actually welcome this. Even if for some reason they determine not to make a declaration or a recommendation, this actually bodes well for us to at least bring this to their attention and let them look at it.
Okay.
But again, by making this declaration, it's really still up to the governor's office to declare a broader disaster,
right,
which would then open up state resources to the people that would like to access them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move we declare a local disaster and request to declare a state drought emergency for Lincoln County, Oregon.
No public input?
No. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Motion carries. Opportunity for public input when there's constituent input, Cindy. Okay, now we're on to the discussion information items. This is again initiation of vacation proceedings for Jump Off Joe, County Road 500. Director Kenyon, you're back.
Thank you. As I said previously, the county is in possession of a petition to vacate, I guess, what is actually left of County Road 500, Jump Off Joe Road. Petitioners are Bill and Lisa Lund. Basically, all we're here looking for from you today is permission to, in order to go forward on this. I have not prepared my report. This is going to be a rather long and complicated process, and so basically we're here to get the order to go forward with it.
Commissioners, if I might just weigh in a little bit about what Kenyon was talking about there. This is unusual. This is a little bit different. In fact, I think maybe the last time we had a situation like this, and this will probably set the back of your hair back your neck off. Is this the last time we dealt with this like this was County Road 804?
You mentioned it.
I'd say because procedurally we're in the same issue. What it is that we have a recently discovered remnant right of way located entirely within the city limits of Newport. It was a county road dating back to the turn of the century, but it is a county road. And it's complicated because this particular county road is along or adjacent to the ocean shore, which because of that particular fact triggers some additional procedural and substantive issues that need to be addressed in the vacation request. This is not a simple matter. So we're approaching this very carefully in terms of how we go through to make sure that procedurally we've got it together here. You have all the necessary information, have all the criteria that you have to address to move forward with this to either approve or deny this particular request. It is again further complicated by the fact that this is not your decision solely. That this, because it lies within the city limits of Newport, and because it actually implicates substantive portions of their comprehensive plan, there has to be the concurrence of the city. So really, honestly, the city gets the thumbs up or thumbs down to whether or not this particular activity occurs in the city, whether the vacation actually goes forward. There's a lot of additional information and proposals that will come out during the hearing on this matter. There is a large contingent of concerned citizens who've been monitoring this. The city has its own permit activities going on right now. Those are, I think, under, at least a portion of them, are under appeal by the neighbors to this particular project. So stay tuned for this one. It's going to be it's a little more complicated than the normal run-of-the-mill road vacation request that we get.
Commissioner Hall, you had a question.
Okay, a couple of questions for Mr. Belmond, if I could. So all we're doing today, again, is it's a discussion and information item. So when this comes back to us, all we're doing is directing staff to prepare a staff report on the legal issues around this request. And I think you've told me already that because it is a beach access right-of-way, the developer would be required, is it under state rules or the city comp plan to provide an alternate access?
It's under statewide planning goals, but the city has adopted language that actually mirrors completely the statewide planning goal in its own comprehensive plan. So we'd be applying the local provision of the law. And part of this particular application is that the property owners are proposing an alternative access to the beach, which they would construct at their expense.
Okay, next question, and maybe this is getting too far down the road, but if we were at some point to sign off on the request to vacate, would we have a chance to weigh in as a county on whether we found any alternate beach access to be adequate, or is that strictly up to the city to make that determination?
It's really, you each have to make that determination.
Okay. So before we would give any final approval to this, if it ever reached that point,
we'd be able to. If it ever reached that point, right.
Okay.
Commissioner Thompson?
Oh, Wayne promised me you could do it in less than 20 years.
Yes.
Because I worked on 804 over 20, I think 22 years ago.
Yeah, and 804 has been going at least since the 70s.
If you could do it in less time, I'll support moving forward with this.
Yeah. So, yeah, and again, I think that Commissioner Hall was correct. What this would do, if you adopt this order next week, would really set the process. We've got the petition, we've got the fees, so we got to go forward. And this would set it in motion, and we will then address Director Kenyon will address the legal requirements under Chapter 368. I'll assist him in the process to make sure that procedurally we have everything down, that we do the appropriate hearings process, we do the appropriate notifications, and that we address the substantive issues that really kind of overlay this vacation process.
So I think we have a consensus to move forward with the decision next week.
Okay.
And just one more comment for the record, Chair Hunt, that Mr. Belmont made reference to Newport citizens who have raised a lot of concerns about this, and I know at least a couple of them have contacted me, and what I reassured them was that this is a lengthy process where there will be multiple opportunities before both the county and the city to offer public input if and what to whatever extent it goes forward. So
yeah, all we're doing is initiating the process.
Yep. Exactly.
Lots of opportunity for public input.
Yep.
Okay. Then I'll put this order on for adoption next week.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to a discussion on the adoption of the Lincoln County Community Wildfire Protection Plan. I believe we have Ms. Damaris and Council Urbidge.
Yeah, this is your plan. Come on up. This is your plan. I'm just a party role. And this one, Jerry, you don't have to do this one. Unless you want. Oh, you got the order.
Sir.
The more the merrier. Thank you, folks.
We'll all put out the fires together. The number of people we have here. Yeah.
We could have used it last Monday.
I bet you. We'll be fighting fires.
All right, welcome.
Good morning, commissioners.
Well, I was waiting for them to start, but for the record, introduce yourselves, please.
Anna Husing, Director of Planning.
Matt Thomas, Oregon Department of Forestry, Unit Forester.
Jenny Demers, Lincoln County Emergency Manager.
Jerry Herbie, just Assistant County Counsel.
So we're here today to ask for your approval of our updated Community Wildland Fire Protection Plan. This is a plan that actually resides under your Natural Hazards Mitigation Plan under the Planning Department, under ONO. However, the majority of the work for the plan and oversight really comes from our partners from the Oregon Department of Forestry. They're the ones with the most expertise and knowledge, and they really have... It affects the majority of all of their operations if we have an effective community wildland fire protection plan. We generally update our plan about every 5 years. We started that process, I believe, in the end of 2016, and most of the work actually was through the Oregon Department of Forestry. The lead planner, Joshua Shakely, who's no longer here with us in Lincoln County, he was the lead for the county services, coordinating with them. In this role as a county emergency manager, I actually played a supporting role to these. I became the liaison to the fire districts to make sure their input was achieved and put in place, which we have done. And I would say for the plan itself, there aren't any significant changes to the plan. It's more of update. And maybe Matt can give you just a quick brief of kind of what the plan represents.
Yeah, so please. Basically the plan kind of represents just our preparedness, you know, as a county, things we're doing, projects we have in place, you know, Just as we work together, you know, not only with the emergency managers, but the planning department, ourselves, our Forest Service counterparts, BLM counterparts, local fire districts, we're all just kind of working together to come up with a plan that prepares ourselves as best as possible in the event of a wildfire.
And also the plan provides them the framework that they need when they want to apply for grants to do special projects such as FireWise, and that without this plan in place, they would not qualify for those grant opportunities.
Correct. And currently we do have three grant areas in Lincoln County. One is Salishan, and that grant's soon to sunset, but we've used essentially all the money in that grant and accomplished more acres and projects than we anticipated, which is a good thing. Also, we've got a grant area in the Harlan, kind of the greater Harlan area, and also the Sowetz-Logsdon area. And those grants are for, fuels mitigation around homes and structures mostly. And we're looking mostly at the home and kind of that surrounding area directly around it. So trying to get, brush and shrubs and tree limbs and, trying to make those houses as defendable as possible in the event of a fire.
Any questions? I have a question. You mentioned Salishan, the Harlan area, and Sowetz-Logsdon. Are there other areas where you would say that there's a higher risk or threat to property owners, home dwellings?
So these are just areas that we that kind of fall into. And you have to, or I apologize, I'm not sure on the exact framework, but there's some framework when we apply for these grants that they've got to be adjacent to certain areas. So we put in with these grants with our other units. So we have two community wildfire foresters in the West Oregon District, one of which is in our Dallas office and one's in the Philomath office. And so these grants we've got all throughout the district, and they manage those out of that office. So they look at the different areas in the county, or not only in this county, but Benton and Polk and Yamhill counties as well. And they try to pair those together as best as possible to make those grants competitive.
So perhaps a follow-up to that might be is that all areas in Lincoln County have a threat and vulnerability to wildfire, and though these may be the focus concentrated areas by the state or those fire districts, one of our jobs for emergency management in the planning department is to promote that FireWise mentality of really how do you clear your property, how do you have a defensible space, and I would say that's something obviously with our current climate change, the drought conditions, the additional fires that we're seeing across Oregon, and having a greater cultural understanding that threat exists. What I hope to see is more opportunities where property owners seek out that information when we provide it to them about how do you really protect your home, how far away trees should be, especially with the climate change that it appears to be continuing to get drier and drier each year.
Okay. Any other comments from the panel? Questions from commissioners?
Just make one quick comment on using direct planning. Want to compliment everyone that's been involved, in addition to making sure that we're eligible for grants, right? Because the FEMA world is broken up into before something happens and then after something happens. This is about before something happens, so that's what the natural hazards mitigation plan, mitigation meaning we're doing stuff so we're prepared, or that we don't even have as bad an event as possible. So once every 5 years we do that, it's kind of like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. By the time you're through doing your update, it's time to look for the grants and pull it all together but this came in trailed in later. But I think with the Depot Bay Fire that we had, some of those real world examples helped, and it's the dial, it's not just the eligibility for grants, it's that this process makes us have dialogues we wouldn't ordinarily probably have across the with the fire chiefs and all these other people. So that information sharing, I think, is priceless. In addition to what's on yes, it's good to be eligible, and today we don't do what we need to do to be eligible, and people start banging on you like, how come we aren't staying eligible because we need to do these grants? Yes, that's very important, but I think the dialogues that come out of the information sharing does make us much more ready in the event, and it will happen. We've got a legacy of really catastrophic fires in the Coast Range. Commissioner Hall, I recall when we were, one of the reasons we did the mass gathering ordinance was we had people that were recklessly going out there and doing incredible fire-related things. This is not an abstraction here, that we really need to be prepared. We need to, with what ODF does to maintain and fire stuff. But again, the dialogue is priceless, and I think will stand us in good stead when these things happen. Thank you.
I think mitigation is the key word. Mm-hmm. So, All right, any other comments, questions? All right, so I guess it's the same panel on the next item.
So we have to take action on that.
Oh, it's a discussion information
item. Oh, is it only you get to do discussion today?
Yeah, so just want to move forward to do the adoption order.
Yeah, Chair, can I have a request for recess? I mean, like 2 minutes.
Thank you.
We'll have a brief recess. Commissioners, next item on our agenda is discussion on adoption of the Lincoln County Emergency Operations Plan. And we have some of the panelists, and we have some new ones. So for the record, please introduce yourself.
Sure. Jenny Demers, Lincoln County Emergency Manager.
Samantha Buckley, Lincoln County Assistant Emergency Manager.
Jerry Herbage, Assistant County Counsel.
All right. Go ahead.
So, as is our practice, is to bring forth to you our revised and updated emergency operations plan. We have an obligation with our emergency management performance grants that we review our plan every 2 years, and then we re-promulgate it every 4 years, I believe. We're right within that time frame. We brought this plan back to you in September of 2015, and in order to sort of get the 4 year aligned the right way, it makes sense to bring it back to you now. I've done my 2 year review. We'll get in cycle with the state and our grants to have the re-promulgation, and we'll be sort of be in that, that 4 year time period. So that works well. In the summary that we provided to you, I've listed out all of the different updates that we've been doing to the plan. You've authorized me to make changes to the plan as needed as we go along. One of the most significant plan changes, we worked with Jerry from legal counsel to look at the line of succession, and that was something that we did update based on recommendations from you as the Board of Commissioners. And so we've outlined that and clarified that, which helps with our emergency declaration process. You'll notice a couple of things that I think are pretty exciting. We have adopted many resource tools from the state of California. Allowed me to attend a training session with the state of California for their association. I attended an 8-hour training on their emergency operations center practices, and lo and behold, because we are their member joining that association, we have access to all of their tools and resources. And they had all of our job action guides, an emergency organizational chart, emergency support functions, a joint information center annex plan, something that we hadn't developed yet. So I was able to look at all of those resources and tools, evaluate them, brought them home, did some modifications to make them a little bit of a hybrid for what we can use here, shared that with my peers across the state, which they too had been looking for this type of resource, and really at zero cost to us as a facility because all of their tools were developed with state and federal grant funds, so then everyone is allowed to use it. So one, it saved us a considerable amount of time, and it actually provided us with some resource tools that were very effective and had also been tested and tried in organizations that have many more activations than we do. So most of the revisions that you see here are really developing and strengthening our capabilities for our Emergency Operations Center response.
Any other comments from the panel? Questions from commissioners? I guess I'm, for the record, what is the line of succession that is being proposed?
Sure. Let me pull the page.
Mr. Chair, probably the easiest way to find that is to go to the ordinance which follows, because the language parallels and is exactly really the same as in the operations plan. And it's in 7.215 succession, which is the third page of the ordinance on the back part of your packet. And that is the line of succession that is being proposed.
Well, I was trying to get it on the record. I can read it, but I was trying to get it on the record.
So if you want it on the record, it starts with the Board of Commissioners, then it goes to the Chair of the Board, Vice Chair, the remaining Commissioner, or the remaining Commissioner, Sheriff, County Council, Administrative Lieutenant, Public Works Director, Public Health Director, any Assistant County Council, any other elected official, and finally, any other department director. So that is the line of succession that is being proposed.
Yep. Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Seems to be a good review and good update. So I guess this will come back to us next week also.
Okay.
All right. Third, last but not least, emergency services ordinance.
Okay, if I could begin talking about that. For the record, Assistant County Counsel Jerry Herbage. You have before you a proposed ordinance. This was recommended by County Counsel Wayne Belmont, and I think this makes a lot of sense. What it will do is it will take our emergency services planning to a new level that did not exist before. In part, it will give the highest effect by making this an ordinance and having this placed in the code. And I think the whole important mission of the Board of Commissioners and of the county is to be as prepared as possible when a disaster comes. And I think we all know that disasters do happen. So it's really not an if, it's a when. And to be prepared as best as possible. This ordinance does a number of things. In the whereas section, it references some of the tools that you will need when that bad disaster may happen. One of them is, you know, how do you handle the budget part? I mean, suddenly you may have an incident where your adopted budget cannot accommodate the very large number of dollars that will need to be put out for an emergency. So we reference 294-481, and just think of that as some tools. And we may have some housing issues, and the housing issues are referenced in this ordinance as well, and ORS 401-335. Real importance is it goes over what will be in your declaration of emergency and then succession, which is so important. We can't assume that all of the Board of Commissioners will be able to convene if there is, for instance, a Cascadia event. We never want that to happen, but we have to be prepared. And we just went over the proposed line of succession. We also have regulatory authority within the ordinance. It talks about when there could be a need for a curfew or orders of evacuation. You can imagine some of these things that happen. And working with Council Wayne Belmont, I think what is really good about this ordinance, and we actually didn't see it in an ordinance or two of other counties, is it has a due process provision. So if you order something that is needed because we have a disaster, could be a curfew or could be evacuation or whatever, it indicates how a member of the public can challenge that action. Okay, so the due process is right in that ordinance. Goes over plans, protocols, and rules and how to handle violations. I think this is great. It would be part of the code, readily accessible online for people to see. It will give the board an extra toolbox and will make this county much more prepared for an emergency. I think this is a great addition, and that would be my introduction.
Okay. Any other comments from the group? Okay.
Questions, Chair?
Comments?
Just one comment, again, on the subject you brought up, which is important, the line of succession. You know, I always worry, you know, even in a time of emergency, about one person carrying too much authority, and I think it's, you know, sometimes that could be necessary in an extreme emergency where, as was mentioned, but up top it says, if for any reason a quorum of the board is unable to convene after reasonable efforts have been made in light of the circumstances, then authority goes to these individuals. So as long as at least two of the three commissioners can convene, it's still the Board of Commissioners correct. Making these decisions rather than individuals, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
So to clarify that, convening, what happens if one of us is in the Valley and one of us is in Tillamook? Can we convene via telephone?
Absolutely. Yeah.
If that's available.
The law allows that. As long as our communications are available. That okay. could be an issue because you have a disaster.
And it could even be by amateur radio. If for
sure.
some reason you were at an AOC meeting in the Valley and something significant happened, once you were able to interject yourself into another local public government like our public safety mm-hmm. officials do, and if amateur radio is available on that side and amateur radio is available on this side, unless you yourself are a technician, then that would be a way that would be our last resort for communication or satellite phone.
So again, it's not, it wouldn't be a requirement that a quorum be present here in this building.
No.
It would be a requirement that a quorum is able to communicate and make a decision through that communication.
That's correct.
Okay. I think that's an important distinction. Any other questions or comments? All right, so this will come back to us next week. Thank you. I think this is a good addition.
Thanks.
All right. Next item on our agenda would be reports. Reports from commissioners.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Hall.
Related to the biosolids issue, which I know all of us and staff are continuing to work on, and we're moving toward the August 21st summit. This morning I spoke with Fred Abuzelman, the executive director of the Three County Council of Governments, which, as you know, one of their big areas of interest is economic development. And he has had contact, he said, from several member cities, and he is interested in getting the COG involved with this. They've got strong connections to Oregon State University, and, you know, has at some of our previous meetings, there's been discussion about new alternatives to convert biosolids, potentially for energy or fuel generation, and he'd like to at least begin some preliminary research into whether such a facility might be feasible for our region. And he will potentially send a staff member to the Biosolid Summit. I let him know that we're already really packed with that two-hour time frame, but at the very least submit a formal letter to us outlining what they're looking at.
And I think that's important because one of the elements of the discussions on the 21st will be alternatives. Yeah. What are the alternatives and how do we explore those?
And there, up here there may be many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Commissioner Thompson, any reports?
No, I'll pass on it.
All right.
Just waiting for the biosolids issue to...
Can I do a quick update?
So yeah, please do.
I've been working, of course, with Representative Gomberg and Senator Roman in their offices to make sure that we get the state people that we want there to be there. And their help, they're assisting us with that. We're looking at putting together our speakers for this, and it will have a significant amount of time. In fact, at this point, we're dedicating an hour to public input. On the process as part of this whole thing. We're putting together some panels of speakers, getting folks in there. And I think it's important to note the folks that originally brought this to us, the members of Save Our Solets River, we're going to put them in as an actual panel at the front end of this thing, that they will actually be able to talk about who they are, why they're concerned, and what the issues are from their perspective as those who came to us originally. Rather than leaving them back to the public comment part of this, they are going to be an actual panel of presenters, and I've been working with them to identify who they're going to have doing this, and they're putting together what they want to say. So we'll also have some folks, obviously have some folks from the regulatory side, the folks from DEQ and Oregon Health Authority, talk about water quality kinds of issues. We'll have some of the folks who represent the cities or the entities that are doing this. Landowners are being invited, as well as obviously the public. The tribe is going to contribute to this particular process and be involved. And we've actually identified, not everything's confirmed yet. We're still trying to work hard to confirm the dates and times and who's going to be there. But we've got some folks who want to come and talk about water quality. That kind of pivot to the larger issue of water quality in the Solets Water Basin, and talk about some history of testing that has done there, but I think more importantly talk about what we should be doing in the future. What do we really need to be looking at here?
So, Wayne, questions of you. First of all, 2-hour time frame is solid in that location, which is probably a good thing.
It's a good thing, but...
But you're going to have very narrow time frames for people to speak, because when you say pivot, this thing doesn't pivot, it spins out of control. So what is the plan, or is there a plan now for what will happen after this meeting?
Well, there's two things that'll come with that. One is that we're working with Association of Oregon County Solutions. Greg Wolf, who to give us a moderator to kind of someone who can come in and actually make sure that this particular presentation flows, that we get information out there. And obviously, this is just a first attempt at looking at this. This is an issue that's going to take, you know, time to deal with. But an important part at the very end, and especially having the audience we're going to have there of our state legislators and state regulators, is to talk about what are the next steps? What do we need to do? What are the alternatives we're going to look at? What are the issues with enforcement? What are the issues with regulation? What are the issues with testing? You know, what's not working now in these particular areas, and what can we do? I think we've got some other potential that what will at least come out of this will be, I think, some potential areas that we can recommend to the state folks in terms of potential changes that need to be made in either state laws or regulations to address these particular concerns and issues. So this will be a first step, and then we'll talk about what the next steps would be.
Okay. Follow-up question. Has the congressional staff of any of the congressmen been involved or invited?
They will be invited. We have had some discussions actually with through other contacts with the EPA to make sure that they're aware of this particular issue, and they're actually doing some presentations around the county for other entities. I think the tribe is actually having a person from the EPA come and address them sometime before this particular summit here. And so we will make sure that invitations are sent to our federal delegation as well as the state folks.
Good.
And we hope that, right now my understanding is we'll probably at the very least get some staffers that are coming so they can listen in on this and hear the kinds of concerns that are being expressed. But, and I think that's a very salient point, because this starts at the federal level. And this is a regulation that for EPA, and then it flows down, so to speak, from there to the state. So it's important that they be aware of the concerns and the issues that are being expressed.
So can I make a recommendation that we, because when we get into this, and if it goes like I think it'll go, you're almost have to create subgroups to work under after about the second meeting. Otherwise, it's such a large area to pull together, it's going to be tough.
There's no question about it. This is a broad, you know, we're not biosolids. Well, that was what was brought to our attention. We're really talking about a much greater issue, and that's the health of the watershed.
Water.
And it's not just the watershed, it's water quality and wells.
But that doesn't mean you want to move away.
No.
I'm worried that if you try to take on this as one group,
I agree,
that a group will dominate, and yet these other issues. But biosolids are just as important, and I'm not sure there may not be some other issues that relate to just literally the political aspects of this that may require skilled expertise. And that's why I'm saying we should think about what could happen and kind of have an idea of how to create the subcommittees in, or so that we don't lose the momentum.
I think that's a very good point. And that's really, you know, we're going to be looking to you as the elected officials and the city's elected officials and the state and federal elected officials to give us some guidance and resources in order to move things forward.
Yeah. We won't know how it develops, but I think we should have some ideas of how to.
We're definitely going to have that discussion.
Yeah. What we go in, what we can go with, because some of these other issues are just as important. Water is a big issue, but there's other issues that are just as important and need to be investigated by expertise. I get back to us.
Well, and I guess I'll make two comments. First of all, I'm glad to see that the Saguache Solette's group is a part of the panel, if you will, or presenters. I think that's important. I mean, that's where this whole discussion started. And second of all, certainly as a Board of Commissioners, we're in a position to oversee the different subgroups or to monitor the different subgroups that I expect will be developed or created out of that initial meeting. So I think it's an excellent point.
I just have been down this, shall we call it a rabbit hole, before. And if your planning is, it makes life a lot simpler to keep the momentum going, because you don't want to lose the players.
Yeah.
Creating players.
Well, timing-wise, especially if there was needs for changes in state laws or regulations, we couldn't have a better opportunity than looking at this right now.
Yeah. And I think we, and it'll probably start to develop, but we'll need an immediate strategy and then a longer-term strategy. I mean, like when I spoke to Fred Abuselman, he said whether any of these permanent solutions in terms of, using the product for energy or fuel are practical, he said at best that's probably 3 to 5 years away. So until we can get to that point, if it ever is feasible here, at the very least some regulatory changes that lead to better monitoring, better enforcement as an immediate step, it can all be part of a larger strategy.
Agreed.
Yes. So what I'm worried about is forestry is another issue that would be involved in this as it goes forward. And then water is an issue. And you see how you get, then you get into the fisheries aspect of the involved, and it just, this thing just grows.
You can't pull one thread out without pulling them all.
Yep. Yep. You don't want to lose any of the threads.
Nope.
A lot of work ahead.
Yep.
But important.
Yep.
All right. Any other comments on biosolids or our meeting? I'll just mention that the maritime sector is getting, the governor's maritime task force is getting closer to meeting. They've now sent out a doodle poll to find the best time to meet. So we're getting closer to our first meeting. So,
good.
All right, any other comments from commissioners' reports? All right, opportunity for constituent input. You have the opportunity to address the Board of Commissioners on any item of issue, and we ask you to limit your comments to 5 minutes, and the commissioners may or may not respond. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. And it was a wonderful time away. I'm Cindy George, and I have been gone for a month in Spokane, Washington. And it was a breath of fresh air to see a community actually doing things, taking care of their citizens. The housing was unbelievable. There were apartments available for everybody. Clean, holy moly. Not a cigarette butt, not a chip paint. Went into Coeur d'Alene. They got 30-foot eagle feathers down Main Street. Not one native business that I could see owned, but by God, they promote it. And I think we have got to do better in this community. When I look at Main Street, chip paint, filth, what is going on? Toledo, all of them. We could step up, we could make this place shine with very little effort. Get some of those jail inmates out there and start cleaning this place up. Because that right there, the face of this town, would say a lot. And so, water, where are all these pipes going? We're putting pipes in everywhere out to the ocean. We still aren't. I guess that's the new plan, right? We're going to just send those pipes out a little further. That's what I'm understanding. This declaration of emergency, I know I've got 5 minutes to hit it all. Declaration of emergency, 2015, you know what Toledo did? Sold GP our drinking water and continued to draw down the Siletz. After they drew down that Olalla Lake to critical stage, they went in and sold the Siletz River to GP Mill. When are we going to stop taking, as I said, the entire river? The volume of that entire river is going through that mill every single day and going out into that ocean polluted. Now you got Seal Rock. Has anybody been posting? When I was in Spokane, you had emergency bacteria levels in Nye Beach. I called everybody. Have they got posted to tell those families to keep their kids out of that water? No. No, my husband drove down, people drove. There were no signs, but you know what was on the front page when I got back? A family, a father sitting there with his children on the front page of the paper in that water. So we're failing miserably, and we've got to do better. Okay, that's all I'm asking. We have to do better. Now, as far as our medical, thank God my daughter got out of this town to have her baby into one of the finest hospitals I have ever seen. And I'm telling you, I'm a complainer, as you all know. Not one complaint. It was beautiful, most caring, loving. It was awesome. I come back here. I broke a tooth off while I was gone. Come back here. I'm now destitute, as you all know. I'm on Oregon Health Plan food stamps. I cannot get into a doctor for at least 2 months. As a matter of fact, Dr. Fox, our new doctor in Toledo, said he's got to review the records to see if I'm a waste of time first. So it's a month to go see him, and then he's going to review the record and possibly decide if I'm a waste of his time. Okay, that's how we treat people. So I'm trying to get into a dentist, capital dentist. I call. Half these places aren't even capable of pulling a tooth anymore. They got to send you to an oral surgeon. This is such a money scam, bunch of crap. So I call over Dr. Herkert's office in Toledo. Okay, he says he takes capital dentist. They tell me he accepts it for one family friend. He's got himself listed as a capital dentist provider for one family friend. That's how we're treating our community. Well, we can't get in to see anybody. We got to do better. So I hope, Terry, I know you're ready to take a break. I'm sure. And it is so hard to come back here after living in these apartments. Okay, housing, $4 million for that complex. And of course, people are talking. Somebody better look into how much money that guy spent on that land purchase. And was that, I got a question on that whole Yahats, the grant, 4.5 for 13 units. Was that just another section he put on his apartment complex down there? That there's already an apartment there, and so he built 13 units for $4 million at the end of that apartment complex in Yahats? So, you know, we got to do better. Tiny houses, they're letting them happen in Portland. You don't have to comply with all the building codes or anything. So let's hope we start opening up, start housing people, start caring. That's the biggest thing. Let's start cleaning this place up and caring. Because we're losing the children. And the best thing for our kids is to run as fast as they can out of this town if we don't do better. Okay?
Thank you, Cindy.
You betcha.
Anyone else with public constituent input? All right. Next meeting of the Board of Commissioners is Wednesday, August 15th, right here at 9:30 a.m. in the Board of Commissioners, room 108. We are adjourned. So